Good afternoon and welcome to
Your American Heritage, baby.
If you're new to the show, my name is Ed Bondarenka. My chromosomes are X and Y, and my pronouns are thee and thou, and I am
not your normal fluffy insurrectionist.
And producing the show is Derek Stone. Derek hosts Stone Cold Sports Truth Sundays, noon 30, right after my friend Pastor Sean Todd hosts The Intersection at noon. The Intersection is
not your normal fluffy Christian show.
You should listen to both of those before Dr. Janda comes on Operation Freedom at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So Your American Heritage is on Spotify, Apple, Google Music Podcasts, and you can subscribe, and you should boost the signal. You should be a Paul Revere and get the word out, and more on that later, Paul Revere. So, you know, the anniversary was a couple days ago of his ride, but it's day 1,270 of the coup, the taking of the American government by enemies both foreign and domestic, mostly domestic. American people face a clear and present danger at the border and in the White House. What are you going to do about it? Well, we arm ourselves, get and learn to use a gun. Why wouldn't you have a tool in the house to defend yourself? And we arm ourselves intellectually. We read and listen to good arguments for your position. And we arm ourselves spiritually. This is a spiritual battle, epic proportions, because we battle not merely against flesh and blood, but against principalities of the air, the ether, the spirit world that you can't see. Let's appeal to heaven. Psalm 144 says, "Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle." Please clasp those hands and your fingers and let's pray. Let's go to war. Psalm 5 says in verse 8, "Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make thy way straight before my face. For there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. Destroy them, O God, and let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against thee. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. For thou, O Lord, will bless the righteous, with favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield." So today we have a special guest. We've had him on last August, and we welcome him back today. It's retired Colonel John Mills. Colonel Mills is the author of The Nation Will Follow. And we talked about that the last time he was on. And you should get that podcast. It was last August. I listened to it a few days ago. It stands. Everything there stands. And since we talked to him, he came out with a new book in October, War Against the Deep State. So, John, welcome to the show again.
Hey, Ed, Derek, honored to be back with you. Thank you.
Now, I subscribe to your Substack. It's one of the few that I do, one of the few I think is that worthwhile, and at a yearly subscription, it works out to $3 a month, and that has more content than a cup of coffee for that price. You know, cup of coffee, I take it. A few minutes later, it's going down the drain, but like my newspaper, when I published that, it used to sit on a table forever, and people would read it, and the same with a subscription to your Substack. So I want to talk to you about some of the stuff that you've printed recently, and there's stuff that's happening in the news you've referred to. But before that, I'd like you to promote yourself a little bit. Tell some people how they can find you and follow you, what you've been up to, and who you are. Let's refresh the memory. Who are you?
Oh, thank you, Ed. Colonel retired John Mills, you know, 35 plus, almost 40 years of service in uniform as a civilian for the U.S. government, to continue to serve in other ways in the national security environment. National security is my thing. It's been my thing since 1983, and that's what I do. And I wrote two books here, The Nation Will Follow, my time inside the deep state, realizing right at the end of my career that there was something called a swamp. I was right in the middle of it, watching friends and colleagues spy on candidate then President Trump, battling with them, turning them into the Durham investigation and the action plan for the average American citizen right where they live. They don't want like the swamp in D.C. and the worldwide. They got to make sure they got a clean county, clean township, whatever your county equivalent's called. And the second book is War Against the Deep State. The origins of the mass surveillance system began with the program I worked on 2007 to 2014. It started with good and legal purposes. It's been weaponized against the American citizen and really has allowed the creation of the unlawful fourth, fifth, and sixth branches of government, the fourth being the administrative state, the fifth being the marriage of big tech and big government, specifically federal law enforcement, federal intelligence, and then the sixth being the nonprofits. And so we got to take these down as soon as November occurs, and God willing, we have the right person back in the White House.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because, of course, the 702 just passed with the FISA reauthorization, right? And so now we can have warrantless oversight surveillance of American citizens without their knowledge. But nothing could possibly go wrong with that, right? I mean, you know, be surveying a guy who's running for president, right?
Yeah. And I forgot to mention at the end of the previous thing, it's Colonel Rhett John, Substack Getter and Truth, Colonel R.E.T. John, Substack Getter and Truth. But it was 702. We first actually put that together in 2008. That was part of the original write-up. The challenge is, we put it together, again, with good and lawful purposes. It was going to be mass collection, but there was going to be a robust filtering process to make sure Americans were gleaned out, their things were masked. That's not the way it's happened and turned out over time, and it's gotten far worse. I think we were good for a little while there, but now I think the problem is it's collect everything first, then mass figure out who should it be in the collection and masking them out. Okay, this is just not working. Very disappointing that Speaker Johnson, he had one vote. We could have killed this off. It was an interesting idea at first. Like most government legislation, most government rules and regulation, sounded like a good idea. We need to apply some common sense and sanity. That's not the way it's been playing out. And that was the basis of why candidate Trump was spied on, and the masking, unmasking in that debate with Susan Rice running up to Fort Meade NSA and unmasking and beginning part of the willful part of the spying on candidate Trump and Papadopoulos and others. It's too easy for malign characters inside the deep state, inside government, to tee-hee, before we mask people's name. Let's see what somebody said. Ooh, that's it. Now we're going to mask their name out after we know what they said. Tee-hee. And then when I'm walking down the halls to go to the bathroom, I'll just say, hey, did you know that so-and-so said this? Yeah,
Unnamed sources.
Then we're gonna mask out the name. No. This is just no. We need to go back to you need a warrant for every collection. I'm sorry. This is collect first, mask later, is not cutting it. And it's interesting concept. Too much abuse. This was the foundation for the spying on the Republicans. And what happens every time I've seen this is you take the congressional members and their staff. You bring them to a dog and pony at Fort Meade. You show them the capability, which I've been read off and gone for a while. So I am sure it's only grown far more pervasive, far more capable. But it was growing exponentially. While I was with when we were doing these things, and it was breathtaking. But you bring in the congressional members, the staff members, and they become intoxicated by what they see in the capability, and they go, ooh, I like that. I want that. There's no way I'm turning this down, baby. I'm going to keep this sucker going. No. It's we cannot allow drunk Congress people to vote on, allow this anymore.
Drunk Congress people. That could never happen. Yeah. So I heard some, what sounded like reasonable, good arguments on news shows recently for the warrantless. Well, what if we found out that so-and-so was going to be there was going to be a nuclear detonation or just some kind of terrorist activity, and the data's there and we've got it. I mean, it's almost like what's that TV show used to be on, 24, 42, whatever, Kiefer Sutherland, you know, like, oh, we've got to do something now or this is all going to, everybody's going to die. And it's so we need to get that information right now. We can't wait for a warrant. And of course, that's how all tyrants start out, right? We just can't wait for people's rights.
Yeah, yeah. We just found out too much opportunity for malfeasance. Yeah, I mean, I want to know about a dirty bomb also. But I think they found more Republicans than they did dirty bombs. So I think the reality and the track record is, and these people that we need full transparency and accountability, and you can't have these unclassified operations. You know, if they had offered to, have a more robust oversight program, hire more folks into the that are supposed to be nonpartisan into the, the privacy aspect and the oversight aspect, that could have been a workaround. But no, it was essentially the same thing. And again, you're collecting everything, then backing out the names, then figuring out what should be masked. No. It's this, ladies and gentlemen, this was the whole basis and how a number of the President Trump, at that time, candidate Trump and his advisors, they went after them. So just kind of signed a death warrant here, and Speaker Johnson, I didn't understand the multiple votes on this. I was a little confused by it. We had it. I thought we had it on Thursday. Then there was another vote. Then there was another vote, and then I don't know, but it looked like it was tight. But this is, and all this was started because the Republicans decided to get rid of that one representative, from
Kevin
New York.
McCarthy?
George Santos.
Yeah. That was important to get rid of him because of ethical reasons, right?
Yeah,
we're highly ethical people, as opposed to people who have still got gold bar Bob in the Senate, right?
The Republicans, I don't know what they're thinking here. They will gladly. And then you had Gallagher and Ken Buck really hose everybody. As soon as I heard Gallagher, who I thought was part of the Freedom Caucus, part of a trusted member, as soon as I heard him not vote for impeachment, I said, look, this guy, I guarantee it, is going to announce he's resigning. And sure enough, about a week or two later, he announced that. I mean, you could tell swamp creatures. And Ken Buck, I'm going, holy smokes, this guy.
What is going on?
If I might,
both these guys resigned in such a way that the Republican they could not be replaced by an election. They have to be replaced by a politician. Is that correct? So basically,
well,
I think they're governor.
Once you're in Congress, your audience is not your voting constituents. Your audience, well, it is still your voting constituents, but it's also partly the swamp. And so as soon as somebody starts behaving like that, especially after they say, hey, I'm a part of the Freedom Caucus, hey, I'm a conservative, you know that they are now dancing and singing for post-congressional employment. So, they want to have a seat at Center for Strategic International Studies, at Council on Foreign Relations, at the Atlantic Council, at some other think tank, Center for New American Security, all, and it's, about 70-30, blue-leaning versus red-leaning think tanks and things like that. So as soon as Gallagher and Buck start acting like that, I said, okay, they're gonna resign. But Buck was acting crazy before then. So clearly, he used to be trusted, and then he just started acting crazy. Tell you what, you knew immediately he was he was just doing a Nikki Haley, where she's going to resign 30 seconds before the administration ends, and denounce Trump. It's like, oh, okay, Nikki. Yeah, thanks. I see that. We know the game. Yeah, you're going to try to throw conservatism under the bus so you can try and get a seat somewhere and get a gig somewhere. So that's what happens. As soon as somebody goes crazy like that, they're singing for their supper for post-congressional employment.
Well, here's what I don't understand. And we had a guest on a few weeks ago who said that he knew. Oh, my goodness. I hate when this happens on air. I forgot the speaker's name, Johnson.
Yeah.
So that he knew Johnson before he was even in Congress, a decent guy, good guy. And he knew him, in Congress. And of course, like it's been said, he's one of the guys that makes the least amount of money in Congress. So you know, this guy looks like somebody that you can trust. And yet here he gets the speaker position. It's like the ultimate sleeper agent, Hail Hydra. You know, it's like, what the heck?
Yes, don't forget, Hail Hydra. Even the Nazis were afraid of the Hydra.
The bear, the Red Baron, yeah, the Red Skull.
I don't, you know, John, the speaker position is so powerful, and I think it's a huge leap to go from nothing against Louisiana, but a lot of, you know, congressmen or just women are just kind of cruising along, kind of doing their own thing, you know, and then they get thrust into the, even becoming a congressperson kind of changes people's lives. I'm not going to mention any names, but we had several that we thought were fire breathing, trusted conservatives. They get, they get elected to Congress. First thing they do is divorce their spouses. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So
it makes me worry about Jim Jordan. I mean, what if we made him speaker? What would he do? Hail Hydra. You know, it's like,
yeah,
come on.
Who can, well, I mean, and jumping from, you know, I love Louisiana and I love the Missouri Louisiana case in the Supreme Court, but you're some backwater congressperson and then. And then your Speaker of the House, that's a huge difference, huge difference. And
but this is Mr. Smith goes to Washington stuff. This is where, I mean, I'm a Christian. I think God has a hand and we're all praying. And then here's this Christian guy, like you said, and from a backwater, and he gets in this position. You go like, wow, this must be the hand of God to get rid of the swamp. And then like, no, they got him. You know,
No. And then he goes from congressman to speaker. Yeah, totally different universe. Totally different universe.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where he it's like, Johnson, come on, be a man of convictions, be a man of character, be a man. You need to set the tone and temper here. You don't you're gonna have all these people rushing, oh, this is what all the other speakers. No, frick, I don't care what the other speakers did. Look at what a mess we're in. You know, you want me to do whatever all the other speakers in? Well, you know, well, that's why we're in a mess right now. Everybody's going to rush up to you and say, this is the way you're supposed to do things. Well, that's why we're in such a mess right now.
Well, once again, I guess I'm about as guilty as anybody else. I was thinking at a moment because I haven't been praying that God would have his hand on him as much as I should have, you know, that God would move and strengthen him instead of criticizing him. He's getting a lot of criticism and he's getting it from me too. I mean, when we look at these bills that we were talking about before you came on, you know, the funding for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, supposedly do away with TikTok or do something with banning TikTok. And then nothing on the border made it. And like,
this is just stunning. I think it's disgraceful. I don't know. I mean, even in legacy media, legacy blue-leaning media, they're beginning to suddenly realize what an absolute disaster the blue cities are and the torrent of illegals. And it's not everybody wanted to make this a racist issue. You know, we just don't like Latinos or Mexicans. It's not Latinos or Mexicans anymore. It's everybody but Latinos and Mexicans swarming across the border. We don't even know who these, they're from everywhere but Central America.
China.
And even legacy media is acknowledging this curious explosion of Chinese military age males, and there is case after case of them moving into high cash operations, cannabis, things like that, back massage parlors, moving in. This is killing each other. I mean, there was just another case. Where was it? Illegal Chinese killing illegal Chinese. I mean, holy smokes!
So are they CCP or are they triad? There's a question right there.
At this point in time, no, it's the same thing.
Yeah, both. So, geez. So one thing, I mean, anecdotally, I remember being at the gun range and a couple of guys were talking to the guy at the counter, and the guy at the counter asked, well, how'd those guys you were helping do? And oh, they did real well. And I says, oh, you guys were helping somebody? Yeah, these two China exchange students were picking up an AR-15 and figuring it out. I says, how'd they do? Oh man, like they owned one. I said, yeah, you don't think? Intel agents, come on guys. Like the look on their face was priceless. None of them even thought about it. Of course, a couple years ago. It's bad what's happening here. It's horrible.
Well documented.
You mentioned in one of your Substack articles about, you know, how susceptible we are to infrastructure by them in particular. There are people who suspect the bridge in the Francis Scott Key Bridge was a run-up or a test. I don't know.
Well, I was just on a maritime forum this morning, and I'm not a career maritime guy, but I've had to teach and learn myself a lot because it's such an absolute disaster in itself. But this is one where I've been through complex cyber breaches before, and the interagency teams that are formed and spin up on this. I mean, and it takes months to go through the forensic evidence to make determinations. What I pray is you got to keep everything on the evidence table at this time. You cannot just make these narrative-based decisions. Yeah, that didn't happen. Pfft, wipe that off the evidence table. Yeah, that didn't happen. Pfft, we're not even going to look at it. Wipe it off the evidence table. No, and this is what happens in the swamp. You get swamp monsters. We're pretty sure we already know, so we're going to look right here. Everything else we're not going to look at. And no. But it does take time. It does take time if you're going to be thorough. This is why Volt Typhoon, first publicly announced last May, this is the Chinese cyber attacks into our critical infrastructure, kind of went silent. And then all of a sudden in December, January, February, you have FBI Director Wray, DHS CISA Director Jen Easterly. Now you have the NSA Cyber Command Director General Hawk bouncing off the wall, you know, alarm bells, sirens, everything from all directions all at once. What are they talking about? They're talking about Volt Typhoon, but don't you connect it with the Francis Scott Key Bridge incident? Well, we don't, guys, we don't know.
We got a minute. Explain Volt Typhoon to our audience.
That's the name given to the Chinese cyber attack first announced May of 2023. And then things kind of went silent. It was announced and everybody, big deal. But we've also been having a tabletop exercise by government agencies. Because in the 2023 NDAA, it was required the U.S. government do a tabletop exercise to understand how China will shut down our domestic critical infrastructure in case of conflict over Taiwan. Guess what? The results of that tabletop war game are probably coming out also. And everybody's realizing the Chinese are owning us, have planted malware in power, the power grid, power plants, in water filtration plants, air traffic control, the spy cranes. Biden came out with a presidential executive order on spy cranes in our ports in February. And about China, it's all about Chinese penetration. 80% of the cranes. Okay. So Volt Typhoon. It's all about Volt Typhoon, the Chinese cyber attack.
And of course, TikTok plays into that by cyber surveillance of all of its users and influencing the young kids who are using that to support liberal, non-American ideals. Well, Derek lets me know we've got about 45 seconds left. You got anything you want to say in closing there, Colonel?
Hey, no, that's it. And Derek, thank you so much. An honor to be on the show with you guys. And let's just keep it shoulder to shoulder. And we're in this together. And we'll win if we put our shoulder to the wheel.
Thank you, sir. God bless you for all you're doing. Folks, come on back. Second half of the show, Your American Heritage.
We were made to be courageous. We were made to lead the way. We could be the generation that finally breaks the chains. We were made to be courageous. We were made to be courageous. We were warriors on the front lines, standing unafraid.
Well, welcome back to the second half of
Your American Heritage, baby.
So that was Theron. And contrary to Theron and to Kupke, you can expect from me excellent broadcasting technique, marginal content. So welcome back to the second half of the show. I don't have a guest for the second half of the show. And I'm willing to take callers on anything that we talked about in the first half of the show and anything I'm about to talk about. Do have some stuff to present you with. And the number is 734-822-1600. Operators are standing by. Right, Derek?
That's right. Well, operator.
Operator. Let's keep Derek busy. Let's make him earn his money. Give a call. So I want to tell you, I got an email from a listener that I found surprising, and I want to read this to you. Mr. Bondarenka, I am writing to express my deep appreciation for the wonderful content your radio station provides. As a devoted listener, I am constantly tuning into your station through the internet, and I must say that your programming has greatly enriched my life. Your quality content, the richness of your program, makes you an endless source of pleasure and enrichment for me. Therefore, I allow myself to request with warmth and respect if it would be possible to receive from promotional items such as t-shirts, hats, or any other stuff with your radio station's logo on it. I would feel immense joy and deep pleasure upon receiving these promotional items. Not only would they symbolize my attachment to your show, but they would also bring a great deal of happiness into my everyday life. Signed, Moad Shrabarat, Antaria, 20570, Casablanca, Morocco. So that's some international listenership there, huh? No. So, one thing I want to bring up here is, before I forget, as I like to once again ask you to pray for my young friend Ian, the Marine who was in Okinawa, who was shot and is in the hospital now. He's facing a big challenge. And if you would keep Ian in your prayers, I would appreciate it. My closest friend is in California sitting with his son right now during that. And so I can't be with my friend to console him. And I called him up the other day and I told him, I said, it's kind of interesting that when Job, because I was thinking about what friends do with other friends, especially when something horrible happens. And I thought about Job, and Job had all this calamitous stuff happen to him. And what did his friends do? They came and sat with him for 7 days. 7 days they just sat with him. And sometimes that's all you can do. You don't have the words. You just sit there and you be quiet. And you just be there and you pray, right? Well, of course, they didn't offer to rebuild his house. There is that. I think maybe I would have said, hey, can I rebuild it? Maybe you like this wall put up, Job? But, whatever. So let's see now. I talked to Bill Federer today, and I asked him, since he can't be on the show to talk about this, whether I could speak to him about, quote his latest American Minute on Lexington and Paul Revere. And he said, yeah, brother, go right ahead. Appreciate it. So I'll do that in a few minutes. But before I do that, I thought it was kind of interesting here, and I'm looking for it. It's a lot of writing here, scrolling, and what do you know? Okay. So basically, I didn't post that into my show notes. But what I did was Mika Brzezinski and Representative James Clyburn were on Morning Joe, and they were talking about the economy. And Mika was, talking about how people feel they're being gaslit. And I just want you to listen. This is kind of amazing.
Let's talk about some of the real warning signs that I heard for the Biden campaign, Congressman. And that was that these undecided voters polled and then in this focus group showing that they are really suffering when it comes to interest rates, trying to buy a home, looking at their own personal economies, and they're feeling like they're being gaslit. They're feeling Joe Biden isn't accountable. What's your response to that, and how can the campaign address these feelings?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I think that we have to focus on people's everyday lives. And 401ks are not about people's everyday lives. And I do believe, just from my own observations, from the conversations I've had with people, there are concern about things like inflation. But what we've got to get them to see is that inflation today is about 40% of what it was when Joe Biden took office. And so the inflation rates are down and people's incomes are up. Unemployment is on the decrease. And although we see the prices at the stores costing more money, people are in fact earning greater incomes.
So I'll validate that. I think the disinformation out there is distorting the entire process. I think social media doesn't help. But there's also a lack of validation that these voters feel. And I'm going to bring in Andrew Ross Sorkin right now because we just got breaking news. The consumer price index increased at a faster than expected pace last month, a signal that inflation remains stubbornly high. Let's bring in Andrew, co-anchor of CNBC Squawk Box. What will this mean to people in their everyday lives?
Well, I think this was a big surprise. It is accelerating. And, you know, we've been on this broadcast for months now about how the trend line was in President Biden's favor. Today, I imagine they're throwing a party in Mar-a-Lago because the truth is that right now, inflation has now moved in the opposite direction. So it's going to be harder for the administration to make the argument around this inflation trend line. What?
Isn't that interesting that here Mika comes on and talks about people feel they're being gaslit, and then James Clyburn comes on and basically gaslights us, right? And then they have breaking news, and their own reporter comes in and says, you know, actually, the economy's, I'm not laughing at the bad economy, but I think it's amazing the way these people work. That have they no shame to come on here on the television and say, oh, everything's a lot better, and then 2 minutes later get corrected on their own show by another voice that they employed. We have a caller, and you too can call 734-822-1600. We have a caller, Mike. Mike wants to talk about the geopolitical situation in the Middle East. Go ahead, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I was downtown Ann Arbor. I want to talk about the inflation thing first. You know, the gas prices was $3.90. It's not even Memorial Day. Yeah, Memorial Day, it's going to be close to $5 a gallon. You know how it goes up in the summertime.
I know how it goes up when Iran starts a war in the Middle East, too. Yeah.
All right. This is my take. You know, I've been hearing all the pundits talk about World War III and all that crap. You know, I would say as the U.S. government, if we get involved with World War III, we're going to take over Russia, all right? Now, if you want us not to take over Russia after we get involved with World War III, then you need to stand down. What do you think, man?
Well, I don't see how that plays out, but as far as what's going on in, well, not just the Middle East, and you were originally going to talk about Middle East politics, and I don't mind, don't get me wrong, but then you brought up Russia, and we just had funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and I'm not a fan. In fact, let me play this for you. In my book, two out of three of those ain't bad. I would fund Israel and Taiwan, and I wonder why we don't talk about the Philippines for that matter, but let Ukraine, and when it comes to Ukraine, why doesn't Europe stand up? It says here, Representative Keith Self of Texas, if the U.S. continues to support this effort, the European Union will not muster the political will to do what they should. Why are we carrying the weight for Europe? If Russia's a threat, the way they like to talk about this is World War II territory again, with Russia invading its neighbors like the Nazis did in World War II. Well, for one, the real Nazis are Hamas today, if you want to talk about Nazis. Russia doesn't want to invade the rest of Europe. For one thing, their customers are theirs for their oil and gas. They just want back what they feel they had taken away from them in a part of Ukraine. We can argue about that. I don't want to. It's just, I'm just explaining how they feel about it. I'm not a fan of one country invading another country to take a portion of that country either. But I don't know that it's our business to do anything about that. Does any of that make sense?
No, but what I'm saying, Russia is on they're on a crutch right now with their dealing with Ukraine. So they're easy taking. Don't you understand that? They're an easy taking right now. Yet if you start World War III, whether it's Iran and Israel, we will take over Russia because they are weak.
Okay, well, I don't see how that happens because we would have to occupy them with a military that is underfunded and underpopulated right now. We can't get the recruits we need unless we went to a draft and sent a lot of unwilling citizens over there to occupy Russia. As far as World War III is concerned, I kind of think Russia and the United States would kind of end up as a mutual ash heap too. But yeah, I don't see that happening. I think that we can defeat them in a way that they'll back down militarily and not be so aggressive. And I think that's what what do they call those people? The neocons in Congress are proclaiming that they want to force Russia back into its own borders. And yeah, but I don't think anybody's talking about world. In fact, I don't see a World War III with Russia. So, but thanks for calling.
Dude, on the big chessboard, Ukraine is just a pawn, correct? They're not a king or a queen or a bishop or a knight. They're just a pawn. Don't you see that?
Yeah, I do. Yep. But I don't see that Russia is our big enemy, an existential threat to the United States. So we can agree to disagree on that. If anybody else has a comment they want to make about this, the number is 734-822-1600. And feel free to call in. I'm open to being contradicted. So, and by the way, speaking of World War III, a friend of mine, he's been on the show before, Larry Lambert. He's a former Navy SEAL, former investigator of international money laundering, has a global security consultation firm, and he's an author, and he hosts a pretty popular blog called Virtual Mirage. You can look that up, Virtual Mirage. It's always interesting. It's my daily go-to. And yesterday, a commenter there said, quote, "What I find impossible to understand is that almost everyone is oblivious to the fact that we have entered World War III." And then I replied to him with a quote from Colonel John Mills' Substack, where Colonel Mills says, "We are in World War III. September 1939 was October 2023. So, yeah, that was a striking blow. I mean, right now we're seeing Iran firing into, well, let's start out. I'll be honest with you. Israel first attacked Iranian soil when they fired into her consulate. I'm pretty sure consulate counts as embassyal. Yeah, I could be wrong. Now I think about it. If it's not an embassy and it's just a consulate, then maybe it doesn't count as sovereign soil for that country. So I'll take that back. If anybody knows any better about that, please give me a call. But nonetheless, Israel fired on an Iranian general, just like Trump did earlier, a couple years ago, with some success, Soleimani. And, excuse me a second. My, excuse me. No cough button. Throat's getting dry. So then Iran retaliates with this, what appeared to be a massive attack. And there's a lot of different thoughts about this massive attack. My friend Larry actually posted at his site, Virtual Mirage, a link to a guy who's favorable to the Iranians and to Gaza, of all things. This guy had credible information and videos that seemed to suggest that Israel was not as successful as everybody is saying they were, saying that they knocked down 99% of their incoming. And this guy was showing video that actually it appears that some runways were hit in Israel and a lot more damage was done than anybody's talking about. So I frankly don't know. I I try to keep an open mind on these things. But, you know, there's people who have a dog in the fight. This guy was obviously pro-Gaza, pro-Iran, I should say pro-Hamas, pro-Iran. And, you know, almost shouting Allah Akbar at the thought of, you know, Iran hitting Israel. And then, of course, Israel is going to put it on the best possible light they can. And it does look like a stunning success for our forces. But, man, now Israel just came back and hit Iran again. Very near some nuclear reactors, as if, hey, if we want to go after your nuclear reactors, we can do that. Now, it's also said Israel has nukes, and they could go after Iran with a nuke. Well, the thing is that Israel has a nuclear reactor. Now, it has nukes, but it has a nuclear reactor. And Israel is a very small country. I mean, if you look at a map of the size of Israel in comparison to the size of the Arab nations around it, it's like 5% of the landmass or less. And a conventional hit, a conventional missile on that nuclear plant would be devastating. It'd be the ultimate dirty bomb to Israel. So these guys are playing with fire here when Israel is firing close to Iranian nuclear reactors. It sends a message that they could do that. The question is, do they want to do that? It's sad. We need to be praying for the Middle East. And the Bible says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So I do that regularly. I'll be honest with you. If it wasn't for the Bible, I probably wouldn't be I wouldn't be a fan of Israel as much as I am. But there's something going on with Israel and God's purpose. The fact that, once again, that they're a nation again in 1948, after a couple thousand years of not being a nation, all these people come back to them. They bought most of the land, most of the housing that they took, they bought from the people that were there. They didn't push them out, frankly, like we did the First Nations when we expanded westward in the 1800s. No, they were it was a pretty reasonable, like I said, purchase of land that went on. And it's interesting that people will support Hamas and come right out and say, I support Hamas at these college rallies that we see, these protests where these students are coming out and screaming, I am Hamas, I am Hamas. Well, that puts you on a terror watch list for the United States. I believe Hamas was put back on the terror watch list. If not, should be, they were. And so if you want to identify as a terrorist in the United States, well, then, and scream death to America in Dearborn, then maybe, just maybe, you are an insurrectionist, you know, and not a warm and fuzzy insurrectionist, but an insurrectionist that needs attention by this federal government that instead seems to be focused on going after the rightful president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. So, and trying to accuse him of being an insurrectionist and remove him from any possibility of being restored to the presidency. Oh, that's a lot of words. So, here I wanted to read to you about Paul Revere, because the Battle of Lexington was just a few days ago, a couple hundred years ago and a few days ago. And it's very interesting the way that worked. Let's see now. Bill Federer, in his article, writes out, the sun never set on the British Empire. It was the largest empire in world history. And, you know, out of nearly 200 countries in the world, only 22 were never controlled, invaded, or attacked by Britain. And in April of 1775, the Royal Military Governor of Massachusetts, General Thomas Gage, sent 800 British Army regulars under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Francis Smith on a raid to seize guns from American patriots at Lexington and Concord. I called into the Cupcake Show earlier, and I mentioned that George Mason of Virginia said, to disarm the people is the best and most effectual way to enslave them. Well, a warning was sent from Boston's Old North Church, that's the lanterns in the church steeple, that The regulars were coming. The regulars were coming. Nobody said the British were coming because, frankly, we're still a British colony, but or a set of colonies. And so Paul Revere was captured along the way, but William Dawes and Dr. Samuel Prescott continued the midnight ride. And Paul Revere wrote, about 10 o'clock, Dr. Warren sent in great haste for me and begged that I would immediately set off for Lexington, where Mr. Hancock and Adams were, because they also wanted to capture John Hancock and John Adams there, besides all the gunpowder stores. This is one of the great, great confiscations attempted by, you know, the British Empire or by a government. And this is why they want to confiscate our guns. We're a threat. So I got off a horse of Deacon Larkin and set off, or I got a horse of Deacon Larkin and set off. It was then about 11 o'clock. And after I had passed Charlestown Neck, I saw two men on horseback. And when I got near them, I discovered they were British soldiers. One tried to get ahead of me and the other to take me. I turned my horse very quick and galloped to Medford Road. The one who chased me, endeavoring to cut me off, got into a clay pond near where the new tavern is now built, and I got clear of him. I went through Medford, over the bridge, and up to Menotomy. I alarmed almost every house till I got to Lexington. And Revere continued, I mentioned that we had better alert all the inhabitants till we got to Concord. The young doctor much approved of it, and we had gotten nearly halfway. Mr. Dawes and the doctor stopped to alarm the house, people of a house, and I was about 100 rods ahead when I saw two men. In an instant, I was surrounded by four. So basically, he got arrested. But interestingly enough, riding all night were Paul Revere and a 29-year-old African-American, Wentworth Cheswell. And Cheswell was constable of New Market, New Hampshire, being considered the first African-American elected to public office in U.S. history. So here you got basically an African-American citizen. Probably actually did come from Africa. Who knows? But here we've got a man, a patriot, trying to warn the villages of the approach of the British Empire to take away their means of self-defense. And yet, I guess he didn't feel that he was under at the inculcation of a nation that was founded on bigotry and that was founded on slavery. No, this man was a patriot of color. So goes on. Looks like I won't have time to read the entire Wadsworth Henry Lott Wadsworth poem for you, but I encourage you to. You can find it online. And go to AmericanMinute.com and follow Bill Federer's post there about this and the other stuff that Bill writes about. It's very informative, very patriotic, and it would behoove you to read that. Well, folks, that's been another show of Your American Heritage. Please join us next week. Derek, thanks for helping with the show. And folks, coming back next week. God bless America, and America bless God.